You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt.
All right, welcome everyone to another episode of Lean Local. And of course, this is the show where we do what we say. We lean into the local issues. And today, probably can't get anything as more timely or more local than what we're going to discuss today. And today, I'm going to spend this hour talking about the relocation of the coal piles. And that's where I'm starting, but there's a lot more into it than just the relocation of the coal piles. There's the respect and the expansion of the port, because some people, Green Bay, Packers, healthcare, cheese, true, but we're a port city. And the impact of that port that we have here along the Fox River is significant. And we're going to learn about that in just a few minutes. And then, so we want to work with the port. And then we have this opportunity to free up some land along the waterfront and maybe turn that into an economic opportunity for the city. And we'll be talking about that in the second half hour. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Last week, I got some nice comments from you when we spent the hour talking about the Southern Bridge, another local timely project. So today it's going to be the development of the port and the relocation of the coal piles. And you know me, when I, that's with the time I spent as mayor, one thing I did get out of it are connections. So I can get the best in here to talk to. And we'll start right with the port. So we got the port director with us, Dean Hain. And I think many of you read about Dean Hain. He's been the port director since 2012, but has been with the county years before that. And that's a big job you have. And I just want to welcome you, Dean. Thanks for being here. Dean Hain.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. We're talking, before we came on the air, the port of Green Bay is been around for a long time, longer than a lot of other things in our community. And yet, I'm just not sure people understand how valuable it is.
Yeah, you know, the whole founding of the city is based upon the waterway. You know, the establishment of the different forts that have been here, the British, a French, and a U.S. fort, Fort Howard. It goes back till then.
Yeah. And using that waterway. And what, the decision to make it into a port, because you bring in a variety of products now, right?
Correct.
I mean, what's the main thing? Everybody knows coal because it's the most visible. But
visible and probably most declining. But anyways, we have about a variety of commodities on any given year. It's probably 12 to 15 different commodities that come in. Limestone, salt, coal, cement, liquid asphalt, fuel oil, petroleum products, diesel, gasoline, export ethanol, pig iron, wood pulp. You know, there's a number of different commodities that are coming into our economy.
And when people say, well, why don't we just make it all condos and restaurants and not have a port? Let's remind people of not the economic impact. Let's talk about the environmental impact of a port.
Yeah, moving things by water is the greenest mode. The volume of tonnage that you can carry on one vessel is incredible. So one vessel coming into Green Bay can carry, let's just say right now with the water levels, about 20,000 tons on one transit. And if you converted that one transit to trucking, that's over 1,000 trucks.
I like 1,000 trucks off the road, yeah.
Yeah, or 1,800 or 180 rail cars. So it's significant. That means less fuel's consumed, very safe, right? You know, you don't hear about water incidents, and when there is tragedy on the Great Lakes, you know, they write songs about it. So it doesn't happen, but our roads are much safer when you have water transportation.
And that we have to benefit as consumers too, right? I mean, it's less expensive?
Yeah. As a property tax payer in Brown County, the fact that we can get in cement for our municipalities and maintain the roads, the cheapest possible mode, that helps us.
Yeah.
for the state to be able to get salt into the area to maintain our roads in the winter, that's low cost mode of transportation.
So we bring a lot, and you're talking about the limestone cement. Do we ship out stuff as well?
Yes. Right now, the primary export is ethanol. So as our agricultural industry is producing ethanol,
right,
we'll export that to the East Coast, and they'll use it as fuel additives on the East Coast.
Okay, wow. And it is cool when those ships come in, and I'm with you on people sometimes complain about the bridge being up, but there's some of us who get out of our car and take pictures too, you know? I mean, that's theater on the water. I think it's...
Yeah, I remember we kind of coined that term when you were mayor, calling it urban theater. People do. I mean, I know people that are living in the apartments right here along the river that consider themselves boat nerds. They're watching and waiting for that vessel to come in or depart.
Right. And you can track that, too. You have pretty good – they have knowledge coming up when it's going to be there. And, yeah, people, they get their phones out and they're, you know
– Yeah. I'm sorry. I was going to say the Marine Traffic app is the app that you can go on your phone and you can see all the vessels moving around all across the Great Lakes, Marine Traffic app. So the public might be interested in that. And it's pretty interesting when you can see a ship, you know, like that cruise ship I was watching, you know, come around Death's Door, Washington Island, and just a number of hours. And there it is in Green Bay.
Yeah. What about, let's just talk about the passenger ship. That's not our thing. Cruise ships. I mean, I don't know how often they come in here. I see there's one in, as we speak. Is that something that you're in charge of, or is that more of a VCB thing, or how does that all work?
It's really a partnership of the Port, the City of Green Bay, and the Visitor and Convention Bureau. And we would obviously like to grow that business as a port.
Right.
And we're challenged. Our biggest challenge is these big, beautiful cruise ships. They don't want them to get scuffed up. They don't want to scuff them up. And to come through the railroad bridge that sits towards the mouth of the river is a challenge for pilots and that to come through.
Oh.
So, you know, if we can figure out a way to fix that railroad bridge, widen the span, we'll have more cruise ships come in. There was just one in Algoma or Kewaunee last week that was destined, that we tried to recruit to Green Bay, and all the passengers got off in Kewaunee and then came over to Green Bay. You know, so there's opportunity there. We just need to fix that railroad bridge. That's our biggest challenge. And this port development property will also give us another public dock where we could get more into cruise ships coming into Green Bay.
And I don't know, I'm sure you and your wife have taken cruises, but I think that's an awesome way to travel. I mean, I love it. You get there, and I don't know that our Lake Park is nice, but compared to some other places, we need to put a little bit more of an investment in that too.
Yeah, truthfully, Lake Park is great. I mean, you look at the other port cities and the cruise ship docks that they have, we rank up there as one of the best.
Really?
The problem is that bridge, that railroad bridge is the biggest challenge that we're facing.
Well, I'd work on that. If Light Park is up there, I mean, you compare that to the Bahamas or something. I mean, those ports are...
That's different, yes. Yeah, I'm talking just around the Great Lakes. Okay. When you think of Cleveland, Detroit, Duluth.
We have one of the better port. We have one of the better areas to dock.
Yes. Brings you right into the heart of the city.
It does.
People can get off and walk. They can, you know, other ports, they're getting off in an industrial port area. Lights Park is getting us off where people don't need to get on a bus and go somewhere. They can if they choose, but they could just enjoy downtown by foot.
So I want to get to the relocation of the Coal Pass, but tell me about this bridge. I mean, what are we doing to widen? What do you say? We got to widen that bridge?
Yeah, it needs to be. It's in disrepair. It's 120 plus years old. We're trying to work the port with the city as well as the owner of that bridge to see if we can't pursue some grant dollars and try to get that improved. And changed where it's either right now it's a swing bridge. Mm-hmm. We could maybe make it a lift bridge, or if nothing else, just widen the span so that cruise ship has no risk of contacting the structure.
I might talk about that a little bit more on this show. I think that's if that can bring in cruise ships, and you're saying that we have the infrastructure to bring the cruise ship in, and it's respectable. It's one of the nicest ones. Yeah, I think we should lean into that a little bit more.
Okay.
That's cool. All right. I'll work with you on that. Hey, so let's talk about the port. How has the port been doing? You've been there, director, since the last, 13 years. How is our port doing overall, like as an industry, as a business?
Remaining strong. We're getting into more diversified cargo, which is great. As, for instance, you know, coal use goes down, mm-hmm. We're keeping our tonnage up. So that's a, fact of us diversifying and getting into different markets. And with this new port property and moving, we can get into some other commodities as well, which will help us weather the bad times, bad economic times. And the, just so the public knows, the port primarily serves the agricultural industry, manufacturing, and construction. So we contribute to those industries and the strength of them. And mm-hmm. reciprocally, when they're doing well, we're seeing more tonnage.
Right.
When they're seeing downturns, they're ordering less raw materials, and that means that we're seeing less cargo come in.
So right now, go ahead. 200, it's what, 200 million? 214, something like that?
Yeah, 217 was our last number.
That is significant. I don't know that people understand that, and those of us who kind of like to watch the business in our community, that's a lot. I mean, like I was telling you earlier, some of these smaller businesses, $5 million, that's significant. I mean, they're making an impact. They're employing people. And, you know, you look at your business of $217 million, that's a lot of small businesses that you know, you're bringing to light here. And I think we have to keep that strong. I hope we are. I want to talk about this development that you have going on right now. But how about employment in terms of, because I got to believe those are decent paying jobs.
Yeah, the port does pay well. And we're responsible for about 1,600 jobs in the region. Understand that the port, this is where the activity happens, but understand that the commodities that we're bringing in and the service area we're serving is as far south as Sheboygan, west to Wausau, and north into the UP.
Oh, wow.
So that is our service area. And when companies, paper mills around the region need raw materials or farmers, we're the source.
And you say... there's other things that you could be getting into. Do you want to share any of that with us? I mean, right now we have these like five staples that you're pretty strong on right now, but what other things are you looking at maybe bringing in or shipping out?
Yeah, some things that have popped up in the past could resurface again, and that could be for the ag industry, liquid fertilizer for farming, kaolinite clay for the paper industry, can be containers. You know, containers are starting to move around the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
There's a variety of options. It could be even some of the shipbuilding activities that happen here in Wisconsin that we could help from Green Bay.
That's awesome, Dean. So you have this port that you're in charge of, and this whole, when we come back, I really want to spend some time on the development and the relocation of the coal piles. Was that something, have you been at that forever? Because I have, right? You know, we worked together when I was mayor, and before that, Paul, and before that, Sam, and I mean, back to Romy Dennison, you know, who was elected mayor the year I was born. And he was working on the coal piles. I talked to him, you know, before he died and just about the city. And he goes, yeah, we got to get them damn things out of downtown. I'm like, dude, we've been at this thing for 60 years. And are you must have been instrumental in that whole design.
Yeah, it's been a long process, but very rewarding that we have gotten to where we are. And we're not without challenges going forward, but I think they're all doable, and we just got to be diligent and keep plugging away.
Well, we're going to talk about, when you get back, how that's going to help the port, because I think that's really important. But, you know, selfishly, I think it's really an opportunity for the city, too. And I think that if there's a win-win out there, this is it. And I just want to hear a little bit more about how the port's going to win on this deal. And then, like I said, the second half hour, we're going to talk more about that land development. But you know, I appreciate you coming in. You know more than anybody about the port, and I'm glad you're here. We're talking to Dean Hain, the director of the Port of Green Bay. We're going to be right back. This is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt. Angels, to see my name headline the coast. They say I'm a walking dreamer, baby. If I stopped, it would make the show. Can't keep up with my rhythm, though. They keep trying, too quick for the lines they throw. I walk to the sound of my own drum.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started. So
Lean Local, Jim Schmidt, and we are here with our really special guest, Dean Hain, who runs the port here in Green Bay. And we'll get back to the whole coal pile relocation, how that benefits the port, and what Dean sees as the future. But before we do, we want to just thank one of our sponsors of the Lean Local show, and that's Nicolet Bank. Nicolet Bank, they're on the water, so they get to see all the work you're doing there, Dean. Just a great community partner here in the city of Green Bay, for the county, really all of Northeast Wisconsin. It's amazing when you look at a business, and you know, business is difficult. These guys started in 2002, you know, Mike Daniels and Bob Atwill, and you know, here they are now with the third largest bank in the state, 57 branches. And not only that, I mean, economically they're doing fine, but they're just a good company, right? They give back, they sponsor things, you know, Fridays on the Fox, they sponsor things at the new community homeless shelter. They, you know, give a lot of their money back to make this community even better. And not only financially, but also their employees. I mean, they hire good people, but then they have those people go to these different organizations and share their talent there too. So just a shout out to Nicolet Bank, and you know, thanks for sponsoring this. And really just more importantly, thanks for being here in Greater Green Bay. They're just a great example for other banks and other people to look to.
Yeah. Our vice president of our Harbor Commission is works at Nicolet Bank.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Right? And I don't know, you're not paying him. He's just there to just give us time and the knowledge. They hire, you know, good some people. Of the brightest and best. They do. And so we love having, I'm at the new community shelter. We have, you know, one of our treasurers, a Nicolet guy. And he's terrific. So, yeah, just, and other companies do that. I just, if you want to learn how to really do it, you know, if you're thinking of getting more involved in the community or getting your employees more involved, that's worth a phone call to call Nicolet Banks. They just think they do it right. So anyway, thanks to Nicolet. So Dean, the port is continuing to grow, which is great. Thanks to you. 1,600 employees, $217 million economic impact for our community. And now it's going to be enhanced a little bit. So do you like what's all going on here? You were instrumental in this whole sea rice relocation. And what's all going to be happening?
Well, ultimately, the port's interest is, right, building on those jobs and building on that economic impact and having port growth. And the deal that we have will result in port growth and putting additional acreage into Port Uis. And that'll result in jobs and a greater economic impact for northeastern Wisconsin.
So the coal piles then, will you be building them a new dock wall? Because they're going to relocate. I mean, right, that's the bottom line.
Yes. So what will happen is the coal piles will not be going on to the new property. Sea Rice parent company, Robindale, has another dock in Green Bay, and the coal will go on that dock. The new property will be for salt or other new commodities that Sea Rice will get into, as well as Sea Rice will have acreage at their Mason Street to still do non-nuisance-based port activity, industrial-related activity. So things that don't blow or don't, you know, are any type of nuisance to the neighborhood.
So the additional port expansion, you're going to manage, but it's going to be Sea Rice product? Did I say that right?
They'll be a tenant on that property.
Okay.
And that property is able to house basically two, maybe three, depending upon the amount of acres that the different users would be interested in.
Okay. And that they're leasing that from the county?
Correct.
And that was a little bit of a, not a contention, but it's a 60-year lease, right? I think they wanted 100 and you wanted 20 or something.
Yeah, so it's a challenge, right? How do you write a lease for that type of duration into the future? And but you're also asking them to vacate their current use of the property they have. And so that it took some time to negotiate that.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the county board settled that 60-year term.
Okay. Why did this, and I'm glad it did, but like I said, not for lack of effort, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, why do you think it happened here in 2025?
Well, you know, actually with all the COVID and the relief monies that were out there, I mean, that's some of the dollars that we assembled to do this. This is not an inexpensive project. The redevelopment of the former polling plant property will be in excess of $50 million. Mm-hmm. So to, you know, the biggest challenge of the history is how do you replace 40 acres and where do you replace 40 acres in Green Bay for Sea Rice to be located? the decommissioned power plant has provided that space. And then with the COVID relief funds and other grant programs that have been put into place, we've been able to assemble the dollars to realize that.
So COVID wasn't all that bad.
In that regard, made some dollars available.
And I think that, I think back to, you know, when I worked on it and Paul and everyone else, money was always an issue. I mean, Herb Kohl, as much as he wanted to help us, a U.S. senator, he's like, you got to be kidding me, that kind of money. But it was very expensive. It continues to go up in price, quite honestly. But you seem to have addressed that through a different means. So, yeah, you had the willing partners and maybe money was the issue and you kind of found a source for that. Well, good luck to you, Dean. I just, this is a big deal for you. It's going to take some time though, right? We're not going to see this happen next week.
No. This will take some time. I mean, we have to engineer and design it. Then we have to bid it out. Probably be 2 years of construction, work out a lease with our tenants, and it'll be several years. But it's on the way.
But at the end of the day, we're going to have an expanded port, and the area where the coal pile is occupying at that 10 acres is going to be an opportunity for the city for redevelopment.
Yes.
Well, thanks for doing that. I mean, I know your focus is the port, but you're a good partner in this thing, I heard. And I just want to thank you on behalf of the city. I think it's great.
Yeah, thank you.
So we'll get you back here. I want to talk more about this and some of the new products you're bringing in. I don't think people understand just what an asset that is here in Brown County, and you're doing a good job with it. So, all right, Dean Hain, Director of the Port Authority here in Green Bay, thanks for being here, and we're gonna keep eye on this project. All right, thanks for listening. This is Lean Local, Jim Schmidt. We'll be right back talking about the redevelopment site where the coal piles are going to move from. We'll be right back.
From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor, Jim Schmidt.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to the second half of Lean Local. And today, as I mentioned, we are talking about development, specifically the redevelopment of the coal piles. Those are going to be relocated. And I want to thank Dean Hain again, who is the director of the Port Authority. And but he really knows what he's talking about, doesn't he? When he talks about the $217 million economic impact, 1,600 jobs, and his vision for not only to grow the businesses we have here, but to add more products and become an even stronger port city. And you got to respect that. And sometimes we get overshadowed a little bit by the fact that we're a major healthcare player, paper, cheese, Packers, the port is part of who we are, and it's part of our identity. They were here before a lot of those other companies were here as well, and Dean's very committed to that, and we're lucky to have him. And what he shared with us about how he sees the port being developed is exciting. But what that does is it frees up some opportunities, right? When you have a vacant piece of land and as the mayor or anyone, you drive by and think, wow, what could that be? And some of us wear a hat that's a little bit more focused on what kind of tax base could that bring to our community and what kind of jobs could that bring to our community? What kind of long-term impact could that have to our community? And we're going to talk about that. And I asked Brian Johnson to join us. As you know, Brian Johnson is not only the president of the city council, but he also represents that district. He's been involved in economic development pretty much, I don't know if it's your whole life, but you worked for the chamber and did some other things, and you're here today. So welcome. I'm glad you're here. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to come back. You host a great show with great guests, and yeah. I think it's good for our community to learn about a lot of these things. Port operation is not something comes top of mind for most people, but if you didn't have it, you would feel it, right? And
yeah.
So it's really important.
And last week we talked about the Southern Bridge connection. And again, to people who understand, that's a big deal. I mean, and it's, again, one of these things
that's been talked about longer than the coal piles.
Yeah, it's close. Yeah. Because we had the mayor of DePere on here and then the highway commissioner. And some people had emailed me and said, you know, that was really interesting because everybody knows we're doing it, but what are we doing, you know? And, mm-hmm. and that's going to segue right to what we're going to talk about right now is that we've had these coal piles. And look, They were here long before many, many other things, 120 years and a working river, right? I mean, we work, that's how we got a lot of product in here. And there's going to be some shifting around with some land and some of the items, and it's going to free up some economic development opportunities. Before we get specifically to that part, the rest of the region, you've got your pulse on this community. How's everything else going in the city, do you feel, from an economic development standpoint?
Well, I think like every other community, you have opportunities you want to pursue. You know, what's interesting is, you know, we're a city, and a lot of times you say, hey, we're not competing with those around us, right? We're still a region, but there's a certain level of parochialism that takes place. And if a housing developer is going to come in, it's going to, you know, they're trying to meet a demand here, whether it's Green Bay or Schwabenon or Bellevue. And of course, we want that tax base, so do they. But more importantly, I think we want that density that sometimes can bring activity and vibrancy into your city core that makes a really, really strong and healthy downtown. And I mean, you can't be a suburb of nothing, as the old saying goes.
Right.
So we need to make sure that when we're getting these big development opportunities, that Green Bay is top of mind when it comes to where these developers are considering.
Right. You had the governor was in this past week in your district, right?
Stopped he was. Public, he was, yeah.
You saw that?
Yeah, he took a tour of the public market building. You know, there's he's got a $3 million allocation in his state budget, and that would kind of create some parity for what the state did for Madison and Milwaukee when their markets started up. And so we're very optimistic there. Of course, the governor's supportive, as have been our local legislators. And now it's got to go through the budget process with the Joint Finance Committee, and we'll see how things shake out.
And I'd heard that it looks like the budget, they may hit that July 4th deadline now, because I heard it was on again, off again. So that's...
Well, you know, the state's hard to predict.
Really?
Their budgets are a little more complex than ours, too. And of course, the, you know, when you have caucuses you have to work through, it just becomes another layer of complexity. But
right. So let's talk about the waterfront. And you've been instrumental in that. Update on that before we get to the coal?
Yeah, I mean, phase one is complete. It's exciting. I encourage people to get down there and look at it. I think, you know, until you really get down there and you walk the site, it's hard to really visualize and understand just how cool it is. And it became a much larger project than what was even originally envisioned when you were mayor. And of course, you were the one that started this whole thing. And, you know, now we're moving into phase two. And we do have the funding in place for that. It's the National Park Service stepped up with $5 million. We've got some local funding to match it. But it's phase two is going to be more the inner pieces of the park. So think about the Great Lawn, the dog park, the beer garden, the urban beach, the volleyball courts. Wow. You know, and phase three will be the actual container park itself. And we'll probably seek a private developer on that front. But, you know, we're really excited about the progress we're making on there. These community development takes a long time. Yeah. It doesn't happen overnight.
But those major parks become the major attraction. There's regional parks, and I get that. But you look at Millennial Park, you look at some of these parks where, you know, Milwaukee, just it's like the Piazza. It's where everybody goes. You know, neighborhood parks are where some people go. But that to me is going to be where everybody goes. That's my thinking on it.
Yeah, we got to break our minds a little bit, right, of that traditional mindset of parks being trees and benches, right? This is a highly amenitized park.
Right.
And so, and along with that will come programmatic activity. So staff time will have to be dedicated there to make sure there are always activities and things to do. I think Titletown District is a really good example, right, of a highly amenitized park.
Right.
You know, this will be different. But as you talk about city development, it doesn't have to be one or the other. Cities build around nodes right now. Downtown is a node. Titletown is a node. UWGB is a node, right? So that's how successful city development's working right now. And we need to make sure that downtown is established as a node, and this investment is going to help us do that.
And that's moving along. I mean, you know how sometimes these projects, I can't think of anything just lately, but some projects start and they stall. Mm-hmm. This thing seems to be moving along slowly, but it's moving.
It's moving. It took a while, right? Because it's very difficult and challenging site conditions. It was in the floodplain. It was contaminated. You know, you needed a developer to come along to help justify the expenditure in there. That was ideal, right? You don't want to mortgage something and not have a way to pay for it. So now all of it's coming together, and it's been a game of patience, but the plan's working.
But it's an amenity. I want to transition out of the coal pile site. But that amenity is not going to create a lot of tax base. It's a park.
The park itself, right.
So, and that's fine. You need that to attract, I mean, You look at Central Park in New York, surrounded by some pretty valuable real estate, you know, so you need that, and we'll have that there. When it comes to the coal piles, and I know that's a 30-acre site, and I haven't seen the final deal. I've talked to a lot of people, but it seems like for sure the city's going to be securing like 10 acres of that right off the bat.
Yeah, part of the, you know, obviously the C. Rice and the county are the ones that had to work on the deal to get them to relocate to the Pulliam plant site and the Fox River Terminal site. Our portion is really a memorandum of understanding where we are going to create a PUD or a planned unit development, which is just a zoning overlay over that property that will designate 10 acres of it is downtown two zoning. And then the other 25 acres will still be general industrial, but no bulk commodity storage. And there'll be some other restrictions. My hope is that we can continue to make a good case for digging into that 25 acres and making the D2 larger. But let's start with the 10 and we'll work on the rest.
I like that. And maybe 35 would be too much. You know what I mean? It's a 10 and do a great job. I mean, maybe everybody's going to agree on another 10 in the not too near future, but you're right.
Yeah, so, just to have it, it isn't necessarily a value, right? Especially when you have an active port operator there, as you talked about, that's important. 35 acres is a lot of land. Yeah. To give you some context, the Rail Yard Innovation District, 22 acres, and that'll be 20 years before that thing's fully developed and done. It takes time to develop that much acreage.
Yeah. So the 10 acres, I just haven't seen a lot of visioning and a lot of talk about that. And you were part of it, but when we did the city deck, we had these charrettes, people came together, business people, educators, what do we want to do down here? And I think that can be important, although something, you can't make a mistake here either. Not that we've made mistakes. Well, I mean, a couple of them, but what I'm saying, Brian, is I think when you do this, it's got to check all the boxes.
Yeah, so you haven't seen it because we haven't gotten to that part, I would say, in the planning spectrum. We really don't even have the PUD in place yet. And also, when you look at the timing of the relocation of the coal piles, they have 2 years of inventory on that site. Right. And then, of course, it's time to develop Pulliam before they can move. So you're probably, you know, 4 to 5 years out before anything happens. Now, within that memorandum of understanding, that was one of the amendments that I had proposed and was accepted. Was a requirement for C. Rice to participate in a master plan process with the city. They're going to continue to own the land. They're willing to be the developer. They'll also accept other developers, but there has to be a community planning process that allows, you know, folks to come in. It's a lot of times called impact investing. How do you get the community to lead that discussion instead of an outside developer who's going to do whatever they want to generate the best return?
So I know you don't have the plans done, but you... There's got to be some strategic visioning going on. I mean, I just hope to hell you guys are putting some kind of parameters on for tax base.
Yeah. So the master plan will define all that. And my intent and hope is that you are hiring an outside consultant that helps you do that. People who have done this in other cities with expertise, tax base has to be a part of it. There's a number of reasons why that's going to be necessary. One of the things that I wanted as part of the city's new comp plan that didn't quite make it, we're going to extract it as a separate plan, is a waterfront development strategy. It's a limited resource. It's a limited asset. We can't just be putting up things and not thinking about the long-term vision, right? We can't piecemeal it. And what I would really love to see on that site is a level of density that not only creates the tax base, but a level of walkability that connects to, you know, the rest of our downtown area. 10 acres is not a lot. Think of Liked Park. Liked Park is right around 10 acres. So you start to think about what can you put on there? Well, if you want the tax base, you have to be dense. That's the way you'll achieve it. If you start allocating or attracting space for parking lots and, you know, and other big things, you're never going to get there. So being able to design a waterfront that I think of a city like Milwaukee, who's done an amazing job with their inner downtown area and the walkability, the city deck mirrors that a lot here locally, right? That's what we should be striving for.
So, I mean, you've been around long enough. 10 acres of land at $10 million an acre is $100 million. Are you throwing out any numbers? Is it 5, 7, 8? And I'm talking today's dollars. So if you don't do this in 5 years, I want to index that. But do you, like, you look across the street, that mall, my biggest beef with that mall was it was taking up all that land and had an assessment of what, $3.5, $4 million. And Schreiber came in there and it's, you know, closer to $45, $50 million, which is where it should be. I'm just curious as to if that's something you guys have talked about. You're right. You just got this last week. But on the other hand, we've been talking about it for
We have been. And I go back to some of the massing studies that were done when you were mayor and Kevin Vonk was the director. And that's when we had estimated $150 million on that site.
Okay.
There are ways we'll make that up and talk about it after the break.
Well, that's my line, but okay. All right, we're going to be right back. You're listening to Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, our special guest in-house, Brian Johnson, president of the city council and instrumental in what we're going to be doing along the waterfront with the relocation of the coal piles. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
With Jim Schmidt, we have a special guest in-house here, Brian Johnson, not only president of the city council, but someone very instrumental in developing the west side of Green Bay, the Broadway District, and the new opportunity here with the coal pile relocation. And before we get to some specifics on what he has in mind for that, I just want to thank one of our sponsors for this show, and that's Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Pella, a great company here in Green Bay, owned by the Calawerts and Verhalen. That is a company that is great with commercial. We deal with them when I was mayor in the city. They've done a lot for Green Bay, but also residential. And what I like about Pella, I live, some of you know, in Astor Park. House is 115 years old, and yet we have a lot of new development. And what Pella brings to the party is they'll come over to your home, and they'll show you on their iPad just different designs, different styles, because a window in a 100-year-old house may not be the same window in a 20 or brand new house. They have got different patterns, different doors, and the quality is second to none. I mean, there's nothing better than Pella out there. And you know, you look at them because you want to have good curb appeal, and that's very important. But more importantly than that is you want to make sure you retain the heat in your house and the air conditioning in your house. And and they will show you that they have the best product that's installed by them, and just a great company. And the other reason I'm so in love with these guys is they do a lot for the community. They've helped us out at the new community shelter. They sponsored many events here, and just a good company. Love them.
Calawerts does a great job over there. Yeah, good local investor.
And good employees, good management, and we're just so glad to have them here in Green Bay. So, again, it's just PellaWI.com. on their website, or you can sure call them right here in Green Bay, 920-435-3791, Pella and Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. All right, so speaking of quality products, we are looking at what we're going to do with the opportunity that was just voted on and decided on by the county and the city, and that's the redevelopment. The coal piles are going to be moving north, and we have that opportunity. And Alderman Johnson, you've given this a lot of thought.
Yeah, I mean, for 7 years, you know, we've been cranking on this. And, you know, 7 years ago, we thought it was very real. I remember the press conference with you and Representative Stefan. I think I was there and a few others. But here we are. We're finally, I think, looking at the finish line. And then, of course, the real work will begin. But part of that is understanding what you can do with that site. And you brought it up. Tax base is critically important. So how do you get there? You know, and I pulled a few numbers just to get some examples, right? You think about Hotel Northland. That's a half an acre. 10.5 million assessable value. We've got the Ford
on a half acre,
right? The Ford at the rail yard, that's guaranteed 21 million on about 3 acres. And then the other one, you know, new land that's under construction now, that'll be 268 units. That's 77 million in construction costs, will assess around 50 million. right? So that's how you get there. You
well,
need
what is
density.
Newland, that's an acre? How much land is over there?
That's not
a lot of land.
No, they're on roughly an acre and a half.
Okay.
1.45, right?
50 million.
But
that's pretty good.
Now, of course, they gave you a lot of numbers there, but if you're trying to create this on 10 acres, you need density, right? So that's the important part. Height can be part of it, of course, but use and rent is what drives assessable value. So making sure you have a high degree of people who are paying high rent rates will always drive up your assessable value.
Yeah. So this site is, when the coal piles move, it's not ready, right? I mean, you've got, that's got to be fully remediated, right? Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're going to talk about, of course, the master plan, which will be a process, but concurrently, I mean, you're going to have to do environmental testing.
Right.
I mean, 100 plus years of industrial use, there's going to be contamination.
Think so?
Question is, what is it?
Right.
And that'll take some time, some geotechnical to figure out, you know, soil stability and all that stuff. So it'll be a while yet.
When this master plan that for the redevelopment, so are there some things that the city's prioritizing, like industry, housing, or we're not there yet? I mean, or is it going to be, I mean, one would think it would be cool to have some type of seaport village where boats, waterfront, you know, mm-hmm. like San Diego, but there's just so much you can do. But then on the other hand, it is only 10 acres, but like we said earlier, it is 10 acres. So I guess, is that a lot or not a lot? But
yeah, I think the big thing is at the end of the day, if C. Rice is going to do this or another developer, it has to have a rate of return that makes sense for them. Right. And then we'll have to talk about what level of public investment we want to see there. I think first and foremost, what we want to prioritize and will be part of this is easement along the waterfront. We've been doing that anytime we do a development deal on the water. The city requests a 50-foot easement to ensure we can one day have a trail that goes all the way around the river and have that public access. But then you start talking about mixed use development, and whatever's in demand will drive a lot of that, whether it's residential, commercial. Public spaces are harder. They don't generate tax revenue, but you also have the shipyard, which is a huge site.
Right there.
Just across the street.
Yeah. So, but we're good with infrastructure, right? I mean, the utilities are there, the roads are there. We don't have to do a whole lot. It's not like you're out in a field.
Yeah, it kind of depends, right? If you want to, you're going to have to obviously have access back there. You've got railroad tracks and some challenges. But also, are we creating a master plan for the 10 acres? Or if we want to swing big and convince C. Rice, can we do a master plan for the whole site and make it makes sense for them as well.
All right. So when, let's get a little bit of a timeline. I understand you've got 2 years supply and then you've got a lot of work to do, but when will you start looking, courting developers or a consultant for this? Is that something that you're going to put a communication in relatively soon or, wow, we're out of time?
We'll work on the consultant first, right? So it's going to take 3 to 5 years to build out the Pulliam site for all this stuff to happen. And then we'll work on the consultant to really hone in on the master plan.
All right. Well, look, we got to get you back here. This one quick, but just congratulations on this. You do a lot every year, but once in a while you do big things, and this is it. And this is going to change the face of Green Bay, thanks to you.
Well, a lot of people for 50 years, including yourself, Mayor Schmidt. So we finally did it.
All right, we did. All right, this is good news. We'll have you back. Alderman Brian Johnson, president of the city council and very involved in the development of this community. Thanks for being here. We're going to be back next week. This is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.